Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So we're continuing our reading from the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is chapter 4, which is entitled The Appearance of Sri Narada. Today's text is 7. Again, apologies for not being able to sit properly because of this leg. I can't even do a half lotus, what to speak of a full lotus, so forgive. Katam va pandaveyasya rajarshe munina saha sangvadaha samabhut tata yatraisha Satvati Shrutihi Katangva Pandaveyasya Raja Shir Muninasaha Sangvarak Samabhutata Yatraisha Satvati Shrutihi Katangva Pandaveyasya Rajarshir Muninasaha Sangvarak Samabhut Tata Yatraisha Satvati Shrutihi Katangva Pandaveyasya Rajarshir Muninasaha Sangvarak Samabhut Tata Yatraisha Satvati Shrutihi. Please chant. Rajarshir Munina Saha Sangvara Samabhutata Yatraisha Satvati Shrutihi Vaishnavis Katangva Pandaveyasya Rajarshir Munina Saha Sangvarak Samabhutata Okay, synonyms. Katam, how is it? Va, also. Pandaveyasya, oh, the descendant of Pandu. Prediction. Rajarshahe, of the king who was a sage. Munina, with the Muni. Saha, with Sangvadaha. Discussion. Samabhut took place. Tata. O darling. Yatra. Whereupon. Esha. Like this. Satvati. Transcendental. Shrutihi. Essence of the Vedas. should have proper translation for this verse. How did it so happen that King Parikshit met this great sage, making it possible for this great transcendental essence of the Vedas, Bhagavatam, to be sung to him? Please repeat. How did it so happen that King Parikshit met this great sage, making it possible for this great transcendental essence of the Vedas, Bhagavatam, to be sung to him? Srila Prabhupada's purport. Srimad Bhagavatam is stated here as the essence of the Vedas. It is not an imaginary story as it is sometimes considered by unauthorized men. It is also called Shuka Sanghita, or the Vedic hymn spoken by Sri Shukadeva Goswami, the great liberated sage. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityanamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachadeshtarine Om Agyana Tamirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshara Unmilitam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtang Stapitang Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishyavangsha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vatam Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Matangsha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindabaneshwari Prishamanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha kalpaturubhyascha kripasindubhya evacha patitanang pavanebhyo vaisavebhyo namo namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasati Gaura Bhaktavinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So it is very, very difficult to ascertain the truth even of mundane situations, like we're stuck now in this mundane world, this material world. So many things are happening in so many different fields. And it's very difficult to get anyone to agree with anyone else about what's going on and what happened, what's going to happen. Very, very difficult. Sometimes we can't even agree with ourselves, isn't it? In the morning we propose some idea, and then by lunchtime we reverse field, and then again by the time we go to bed, I think I'll go back to the original idea. So it's very, very difficult to ascertain what is factual and what is not. That's pointed out in one of the little aphorisms about nyaya, logic, Prabhupada taught us. Kaka taliya nyaya. Some munis, thoughtful persons, were watching. And there was a big tree with tall fruit, which is very attractive, aromatic when it's ripe. So some crow approached, landed on the tree, and one fruit fell. So then a big argument broke out. And this is called Kaka, which is crow, Taliya, the fruit, Nyaya, logic. So the big argument was, did the fruit fall because the crow landed on the tree? Or because when the crow landed and the fruit fell, the crow again took off. So then they were arguing. No, the fruit fell and the crow saw that and then he took off. And it's a big argument back and forth. Everybody had their idea of what happened. The fruit fell first and then the crow left, or the crow landed and the fruit fell, and big, big argument broke out. So it's very difficult, even in our mundane situation, to ascertain what is factual and what is not. And so we're very, very fortunate to come across these very pure, very clear, very direct teachings that we are now privy to. And this is pointed out by the author of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. If we notice that every chapter he begins with a little verse that he created himself to glorify Lord Chaitanya or the situation of Lord Chaitanya's devotees like that. So he says, in the fourth chapter, Adi Lila, the verse that he puts there, he says, Sri Chaitanya Prabhu Mande Palo Pi Yara Nograhat Tare Nana Mata Graha Pyaptim Siddhanta Sagara. He says, I am offering my obeisances to Lord Chaitanya because by his mercy, even an ignorant child, Bala, can ascertain the truth of Vedic literature from the ocean of knowledge that's been presented. And that ocean is filled with the crocodiles of various theories. Very nicely put. So this is what we're up against when we elevate ourselves or advance enough to the point of being actually interested in what is actually going on here. Who am I? What is this world all about? What am I supposed to do with my life and energy? And what is the ultimate goal? When we get to that point, which is very rare, very rarely people come to that point. Most people are just concerned, what is the best deal on Black Friday? Okay, I missed that deal. Cyber Monday is coming. Okay, I'm not going to miss that. I'm going to sit down at the computer from midnight and I'm going to get the best. Like that. People are more concerned about that than what is the actual goal of life. So when we actually get to this point, still we're so prone to be misguided, especially in this age of Kali, when everybody has their, again, their own theory of what should be done, what should not be done, and or they tell you, you can figure it out yourself. No. If I could figure it out, I wouldn't be here in this material world. I mean, back, that's what my father told me when I came across Prabhupada's books, and I was immediately attracted, and I started going to the Hare Krishna movement, the temple in New York. So my father, who was a pretty intelligent guy materially, said, you're intelligent. I can understand why you're so interested in spiritual life. That's okay. But figure it out yourself. Why do you need a guru? No, but that's not a fact. In every stage of life, we need a guru. First guru is mother. Teaches us everything. Body trains us. Teaches us what to eat, what not to eat, etc. Every stage of life, we need a guru. But some or other, when we get to the adult stage of life, we think we don't need any more guidance. I can figure it all out myself. No, with that attitude, it's guaranteed you're going to take another birth in this material world. If we want to get out of the material world, is there anybody who wants to stay here? Especially in the Kali Yuga, we see how things are falling apart, totally deteriorated. In every sphere of life, social, political, familial. Isn't it? Everywhere, things are falling apart. Anywhere you look, whether it's the movie industry, politics, education, everywhere. Every day somebody's being outed. They've climbed the ladder so far, they've become senator or president or CEO or big-time producer, director, and still every day somebody's coming out with some new accusation, something they did. Which means that people are so fearful, people are so desirous of material advancement that they compromise their own integrity to get ahead. And then later on, when they look back on their lives, they regret some of the things that they did and then they start accusing others. Not to say that their accusations are not accurate, but my point is this material world that we live in is such a vicious place where it's struggle for existence that people are willing to compromise their own integrity to get ahead. And then later on they regret it. Somebody put me in such and such a situation and I had to do such and such and therefore now I'm upset. But in general, this material world is like that. If we don't take to the path of spiritual advancement, inevitably, we're going to compromise our integrity just to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. Which is basically all that goes on here. Ahara nidrabhayamaitanam cha. Samena etat pashabhi samana. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. These activities are common to animals and human beings. Very obvious to see. And therefore, it's incredible that people think that the animals don't have a soul. They don't have a right to live. They don't have a right to live. We have the right to take their lives if we want to taste their flesh. Poor animals are doing the same thing that we're doing. Eating. They sleep. And they actually cause less trouble doing that than we do. Because the animal, especially if you've been to India, you're here in America, the dogs are pampered like movie stars. But you go to a place like India, and the dogs know their place. They eat whatever scraps they can find. They sleep. Even on the side of the road. This is blowing my mind. The very first time I went there in 76. A dog can be sleeping right here and a big, huge truck, bus, tata can be going by. They don't even blink. They don't even blink. They're so deep in sleep. We can't sleep like that. I'm sleeping on this corner here now for 21 years. And every time there's a little sound or a siren goes by, you know, truck, you wake up. You know, so they can sleep anywhere. They eat practically anything to survive. Sex life they can engage in anywhere. They don't care who's looking, how many people they... So animal life is less problematic for these four things, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So this verse is saying that if a human being simply lives life just to do those four things in a nicer way, right? People think they're more advanced because they can go to McDonald's or some fancy restaurant. There's a restaurant here in Culver City. It's by invitation only, and you have to pay, I think, $300 or $400 in advance just to get in the door. Fixed price. So people think that they're very advanced if they can do that. If I can afford to go to a restaurant and spend $400 for a meal for two, I'm a very advanced person. But they're eating even worse than the animals. The things that they eat, abominable, we can't even mention in class. So this is not advancement of human life. This is not advancement of human life. We continue to suffer here in this material world. And so Kaviraj Goswami, in another verse, this is in the Antilila, chapter 5, he says, if I can remember, he says, Vaigunya Kita Kalita Pashunya Vranampidita. What is that? Dainyarnava Namagnoham Chaitanya Vaidam Ashita. What he says there is that I am being bitten by the worms of material activities, and I am suffering from the boils of envy. He said, in that condition, I have to dive into the ocean of mercy and take shelter of the Supreme Physician, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is our situation in the material world. We are being attacked constantly by the bugs, kita, of material activities. In other words, our human life is meant for spiritual activities, that's all. So that verse I was reciting about Ahara Nijamai, it says that. Samana Eta Pashabi Samana. If the human being does the same four things as animals, no, so what makes a human a human? Ahara Nijamai Matanam Cha Samana Eta Pashabi Dharma Hitesham Adiko Vishesho. Dharma, when the human being takes the Dharma, takes to some religious process, some spiritual process for advancement, that's what distinguishes a human being from an animal. Otherwise, if you simply work hard all your life, again, just to eat nicely in expensive restaurants and drive fancy cars, as we've said many, many times, your car may cost $200,000, just like now this Tesla guy, he'd come out with an electric truck, and at the same time they unveiled an electric sports car that costs more than $200,000. So you could be driving that electric sports car. It goes from 0 to 60 in 1.9 seconds. But if you're stuck on the 405, you're not going to go any faster than anybody else. So what's the use of your $200,000 car? You're going the same 3 miles an hour as anybody's little old Toyota from 20 years ago. So it doesn't matter. All these so-called advancements, it's just phantasmagoria. People work hard to attain these things. To get a bigger screen TV, you're going to watch the same programming. To get a faster car, you're going to go the same speed as everybody else. So these things are just phantasmagoria that the material energy is dangling in front of us to distract us from the real mission of life, which is taking the spiritual advancement. So Kaviraj Goswami says, I am being bitten by these insects of material activity. So we should see that. Whenever we start finding ourselves diverted into material activities, you're being attacked by some germ. Back off. And I'm suffering from the boils of envy. So people are working hard to attain all these things that are really worthless in the long run that you can't take with you when you die. But they're still not satisfied. They're living in Beverly Wood, but they're envious of their cousin who lives in Beverly Hills. And the one who's living in Beverly Hills, he's envious of the CEO who has his own island off the coast of, you know, South Africa or something. Everybody's envious of everybody else. And in that state of envy, they become driven to work harder or to cheat. Cheat. The Japanese, they're known as being very hardworking people, but they've just been busted in a big scandal. This company that produces steel, and steel has to go through a process of certification to certify it as being the topmost grade or next level next. And they were cheating. They were inspecting the steel and stamping it as being topmost grade when it wasn't. And now it's embroiled so many companies, because that steel was then used to make most of the cars that we drive, Toyotas, Hondas. So everywhere around the world, not to pick on the Japanese, everywhere, just to get ahead financially, everybody's cheating, lying, stealing. It's not a nice place. So those of us who are fortunate enough to come in contact with Srila Prabhupada and this literature, this Srimad Bhagavatam, we should take advantage of it. We should really dive deeply into it. And I myself have been working on producing these books for decades now, but still when I read, my mind is blown. So I'm just going to share with you, since today's purport was short. And the sages here are asking Sutta Goswami a series of questions about Shukadev Goswami and Parikshit, what was the circumstance. Most of you already know how this circumstance came about. But Srila Prabhupada, in his teachings of Lord Chaitanya, chapter 23, which is entitled Why Study the Vedanta Sutra. If you haven't read that chapter in a while, this is your homework assignment today. Read that. It is so packed. Chapter 23 of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which is entitled Why Study the Vedanta Sutra. So I'm just going to read a couple of paragraphs here. Please bear with me. But we're so fortunate. Prabhupada's presentation, again, of the Vedic literature, it's a distillation process. All this Vedic knowledge, the four Vedas. First, there was only one Veda that was transmitted orally from guru to disciple, coming down through the ages. And then Srila Vyasadeva compiled them into four different Vedas, assigned those Vedas to his different disciples. And then there are the itihasas, the histories. And later on in this chapter, Sutta Goswami is going to explain that his father, Romahashana Sutta, was given charge of the itihasas, the Puranas, the histories. These are not stories, as is stated in today's purport. These are not stories. It's not that some sages were sitting around bored and they just dreamt up all this stuff and wrote it down. Even if you see it that way, it's still the most remarkable literature compared to anything else that anyone else has produced. But it's not like that. They were not just dreaming up all these situations. They're passing down this knowledge, which originates with the Lord himself, from Krishna to Brahma, Brahma to Narada, Narada to Vyasa, and now coming down through A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. So all that distillation has already been done. We don't have to go back and do any research. Just drink Pibata Bhagavata Rasamalayam, we learned in the first chapter, text number 3. Now this is like the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic knowledge, and we simply have to Nigamakapak Taror Galitam Phalam. We simply have to just drink that which has been pre-digested by Shukadev Goswami and his descendants. So in this chapter 23, and I went to that chapter because Prabhupada says a lot about the Srimad Bhagavatam in that chapter, but I'll just read the paragraph. Prabhupada says, knowledge is information gathered from the scriptures, and science is practical realization of that knowledge. Nowadays what passes as science is speculation. They speculate like anything about the situation of the universe, the origins of the human species, etc. It's just speculation. And when you nail them down, try to nail them down, you should, if you know any dyed-in-the-wool scientists out there. For instance, they think that matter combines somewhere or other to create simple life forms, and those simple life forms over time have evolved into more and more complex life forms. But if you examine it carefully, it's not possible for that type of evolution to take place. For instance, our favorite animal, Gomata. How many stomachs does a cow have? Four stomachs, right? They eat grass, which is very, very rough and difficult to digest. They eat, practically they're eating all day. If you look at cows, they can eat 18, 20, 22 hours a day. And in a couple of hours, they sit down and they regurgitate that from the first stomach, and they chew and chew and chew, and then they swallow again and goes into the second stomach. And then later on they sit down and they bring it up again and they chew another time and it goes into the third stomach like that and the fourth stomach. So ask any scientist, any biologist, any zoologist to explain how from simple forms with no stomach you get to four stomachs. How does that happen? They can't even explain how you get to one stomach. But what is the mechanism, what is the force that would make an organism with one stomach like we have evolve to two stomachs, and then three, and then four. Explain exactly how it happens, not just some broad stroke. They cannot. See, they cannot. Based on their misguided acceptance of this theory of evolution, they take certain things to be factual that are actually not, and they can't prove. They make fun of spiritually inclined people, religiously inclined people, that you are accepting the existence of God and this afterlife based on faith. But they're accepting their scientific presentation based on faith also. If you have a theory that you can't prove, that has never been proved, and you accept it as fact, then that's faith. It's faith. It's not science. It's faith. And therefore, Prabhupada used to say, at least get them to accept that fact, that they're presenting their so-called scientific theories on the basis of faith, and therefore other faith-based presentations should be allowed. But they don't do that. You go to any school and they pick out religion and anything spiritual and they give you the science religion as if it's factual. And they're constantly changing their theories and representing them based on peer approval. How fortunate. Peer approval. You come up with a theory, somebody else had a theory about the origins of life, and now you come up with a different theory, and you write a paper, and you present it for peer review, which means amongst the scientific community, and if enough of your colleagues say, yes, this makes sense, then it's presented as fact, and it's put in the textbooks, and the students don't have any choice of not accepting it. When you go to school, and they teach you so-called science, you have to regurgitate what they give you. Otherwise, you don't pass. They don't want you to think. They claim they're creating great thinkers. They're not. They don't want you to think. And this is a point that I drive home frequently when I speak in colleges and high schools. In front of the teachers, I'll say, they don't want you to think. They simply want you to regurgitate what they've given you. And if you dare to think and ask, well, how is this possible? How is it possible for a simple organism to develop into a cow with four stomachs? Can you explain to me? Shut up. They don't want you to think. They simply want you to regurgitate the latest science fiction. Because that's what it is. It's fiction. If we accept the Vedic viewpoint, then none of that happened. No simple organism. We start out with the supreme being who then creates this material realm. And in every universe that comes from his body, there is the first created being, Lord Brahma, who is the most intelligent. And then he creates all the lesser beings within the universe. That's how it happens. From the top down, not from the bottom up. Not that some simple organism. Just show us. Our experience is that organisms remain in the same realm of existence. In other words, cats give birth to cats. Dogs give birth to dogs, and that's been going on since time immemorial. We don't see cats are transforming into dogs or dogs transforming into tigers. We don't see that. Show us. Don't just say it happened. Show us. And they'll come up with some half-baked skeleton that they found in some desert and say, this is the intermediate stage between this animal and the animal. And they put it in a book, and then you have to accept it. So, Prabhupada is saying here very clearly, and like I said, you should read this chapter today. Very first sentence is so deep. Knowledge is information gathered from the scriptures, and science is practical realization of that knowledge. That's what science is. Knowledge is scientific when it is gathered from the scriptures through the bona fide spiritual master, but when it is interpreted by speculation, it is mental concoction. So straight. This one paragraph you can chew on for the whole day. By scientifically understanding the scriptural information through the bona fide spiritual master, one learns by one's own realization the actual situation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, it's not that by being a great thinker you're going to realize God, but if you make the endeavor to hear from the right source, and then you think about what you've heard and you apply it in your life, then Krishna becomes pleased and he reveals himself. The transcendental form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is different from material manifestations, and it is above the reactions of matter. unless one scientifically understands the spiritual form of the personality of Godhead, one becomes an impersonalist. That's another one of the crocodiles that's swimming in the ocean. That people come to the conclusion, yes, there must be a spiritual reality beyond matter, but they don't, because there's form here and activity, they think that the spiritual reality must be formless and there must be no activity there. That's impersonalism. The sunshine in itself is illumination, but that illumination is different from the sun. Yet the sun and the sunshine are not differently situated, for without the sun, there can be no sunshine, and without sunshine, there is no meaning to the word sun. So there are quite a few more paragraphs I wanted to read, but for the sake of time, I'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. We're so fortunate to have this literature, and we should drink it ourselves, apply it in our lives, and take it out to the streets. Last night, we were out, small party in Santa Monica, chanting party. And I always like to bring my camera, so I was taking pictures while chanting. And then Sri Madhav Mahotsav Prabhu was playing Mridangan. I saw him glancing somewhere. He glanced at me, and then I saw where he was looking. And there was a family, husband, wife, I presume, and a small child, girl. She must have been about 3, no more than 4 years old. So lately we've been taken to the practice of having a donation box in front of the chanting party. So she made a beeline for the donation box with a handful of money. I don't know how she got so much money from her parents, but she took it over there, and I started taking pictures. I'll post them eventually. So she put the donation in the box, came back to her family. So I immediately went to the book box, got a Gita, and gave it to them, and they were so appreciative. And the girl grabbed it, little girl, she grabbed it, she just held it tightly. She wouldn't let it go. I have a picture of it. So even from an early age, they can start to appreciate Srila Prabhupada's books. So I explained, I said, are you local? They said, yes. I said, hey, you guys should come and visit us. Please come for a Sunday piece like that. So this is our life. Our life is producing Prabhupada's books, reading Prabhupada's books, and distributing Prabhupada's books. So next week, we have the Gita Yajna coming up. Advent of the Sri Bhagavad Gita. Everybody should participate, recite the entire Bhagavad Gita from beginning to end. And over and above that, we have 20,000 Gitas in the book room that we want to distribute before the end of the year. So every one of us can do our part, take a case, go out, distribute. Or if we're householders and have no time, we can sponsor, buy some books and give them to the temple to distribute on your behalf. There's no better engagement in this world than hearing Bhagavad Gita and distributing Bhagavad Gita. So I'll stop here. Any questions, comments? I think Satchinandana was first, and then It varies. Like the last class we went to in Palos Verdes High School, Palos Verdes Peninsula High School, because there are two of them. We went to both on the same day. So in the first school, the teacher there, she was a student in Palos Verdes Peninsula High School back in 1996 when we went there and spoke. So she graduated, went to college, and now she's a teacher herself. And she actually took over from the previous person, Mr. Macklin, who was teaching world religion. So now she's the world religion teacher. So she very much appreciated everything that we were saying. And she actually had some little gifts for the devotees. She was so appreciative. But in other schools, that may not be the case. We have been many times to Cal State LA, and there was one teacher there. So when we explained that the Vedic literature was first an oral tradition, it was written down about 5,000 years ago. In the beginning, she was objecting like anything. There was no writing 5,000 years ago. You people are just... She really, really strongly objected to many things that we said. But over the course of a couple of decades, she completely changed. She completely changed. So much so to the point that when we made our presentation, if some or other we didn't mention the four regulative principles, she would say, tell them about your regulative principles. Tell them. So it varies from individual to individual. We do have to be a little careful. We used to go to one high school in East Los Angeles, Garfield. One teacher there who comes to Govinda's used to invite us all the time. But one student Because we don't sell books in classes like that. We just put them on the table as a display, and we tell them, if you want a book, you can take it. If you'd like to give a donation, you can. So one student took home one book, and the parents didn't like it. They contacted the school and said, why are you allowing my son to, you know, read this kind of stuff? And after that, no more invitation to that school. So that's what happened. So another kirtan, and we'll stop. We don't have time. Another kirtan, I'm sorry. Yeah, we've heard that the British, when they went to India, they were awestruck because they come across a civilization older and more sophisticated than their own. So how can you, you know, conquer such people and give them your, you know, less advanced ideas? So they made a systematic attempt to debunk the Vedic literatures, and their two-pronged attack was they would take the young Indians and educate them in the European style of education, and then convince them that this so-called Vedas and all this is just stories that grandma has told you, doesn't have any meaning. And so they systematically, practically force the educated Indians to give up attachment to the Vedas. And specifically on this evolution, they saw that the Vedic literature is presenting spiritual evolution. Not that bodies turn into other bodies, but how to accept that. They couldn't, based on their Judeo-Christian background. It didn't make sense to them. So apparently they employed Darwin to come up with this other viewpoint of material evolution, where bodies transform into others, because they don't really accept in the same way we do the existence of the soul and the soul transmigrating from one body to another. So it was a conscious attempt on their part to dissuade people who believe in the Vedas. Yeah, anyway, we are very fortunate that we have the spotless Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam, coming from a spotless source, Srila Prabhupada. And again, we should appreciate it ourselves, apply everything in our lives, and then take it to the streets. Rantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivrinda ki jai. Hare
I went to the doctor after 3 days and just